Good evening, friends, and welcome to another edition of the Antique Phonograph Music Program. Here I am, your host, Mac, back in the studio. And tonight, I'm not by myself. Now, many times I'm doing the show not by myself because I have an engineer. But I always love having guests on the show. And tonight, visiting from Scotland is Lord Holyrood, here to share his Scottish 78s. Well, they're not all Scottish, are they?
They're not all Scottish, no.
Right. But we've been corresponding for years and have met before.
We have indeed, yes. And I kind of do what you do, in as much as I'm a phonograph DJ.
That's right.
Yeah.
We'll talk more about that for sure. But Lord Holyrood, also known as Graham.
Yeah, call me Graham. It's probably easier.
Okay, I'll go with that. I knew Graham was coming. I was like, sounds like your timing is perfect for a radio show. It's like, well, I'm not sure if I can carry the records. It's like, you'll carry them. And you'll come.
He's like, I will get stopped at customs and I will be searched by security guards because they've never, ever seen anything like a phone or a box of phonograph records in somebody's luggage. Think about it, though. I mean, it's like a big round thing with a tiny hole in the middle. What is it?
I think somewhere around 1995, I did a trip to the UK and I got a bunch of cylinders.
Oh, blimey.
And when I showed up at the airport to get on the plane, they're like, oh, what are these? And they're taking them out, looking at them. And then they're like, oh, let's call the supervisor. The supervisor came over and was like, oh, you've got some Edison cylinders, don't you? I was like, oh, I love those. He's like, yeah, I know what those are. The other guy's like, are you sure? Yes, I do. So it's lucky I had someone who had some sense of what it was.
Indeed.
Yeah. But welcome.
Thank you.
So nice to have you here tonight. Graham has bought a variety of records. And yes, he is a 78 DJ in Scotland. And what is that like these days?
Well, I'm finding I'm doing all right. I mean, last week I played the opening party for the Edinburgh International Film Festival.
Nice.
So that kind of stuff. I do weddings and as well and gallery openings. I also DJ at a club called the Gatsby Club. You can probably guess what kind of music we play at the Gatsby Club.
Jay-Z?
Actually, you know, funnily enough, I got asked for some Will I Am because obviously he's on the Gatsby film soundtrack. But because I do some electro swing as well.
Right, right. Well, how did you get into doing this with 78s?
Kind of by accident. I've been like DJing old music, certainly, for nearly 20 years. I've been involved in a club in Edinburgh called Vegas, which is like a sort of Rat Pack kind of stuff. So I was playing some music from the 40s and 50s at that. And then it was a case of I knew someone who had gone to this woman's house when she was clearing her mother's stuff, and she saw some LPs and said, oh, must tell Graham, you should go around. So I went around. The LPs were absolute rubbish.
Right.
But in the corner, there's this strange little black box. It had rust on one end, and it was looking a bit woebegone. It had an old ticket still attached to it from when it was being
pawn
repaired.
Shop or something?
No, it was a manufacturer's thing, and I thought gave details of where to get repaired.
Right.
And I thought, that looks interesting. So I got that out and had a look at it, and it was an HMV 102.
Oh, classic!
Indeed, a British classic.
Yes.
This particular one was made in 1947. The lady didn't know anything about it, but she did say her daughter really wanted it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, does her daughter really, really want it?
Right.
Or would you let me have it? So after a few weeks of sort of emailing backwards and forwards, saying, please, can I have your gramophone? She relented. And I got it for 20 quid. So like $35 or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. So that was your sort of entrance into the whole realm of playing 78s.
Indeed. I had a collection of 78s that I'd got from my dad and stuff like that, mm-hmm. and some of his friends. But I just played them in a normal record player. But having the real technology of the day to play the real technology is nothing like it.
That 102 is kind of a suitcase machine for folks who don't know it. And they made them into the 40s.
They did. They made them into the 50s, actually.
Into the 50s, even.
They were known as a picnic gramophone.
Yes.
So you would take them on a picnic, obviously.
Yeah. And they were the kind of design where I think of them like a Converse All-Star. They hit a certain point. It's like, don't change anything, just keep on making them and let them just be.
Well, that's right. They had a few experiments beforehand. In the 20s, they had a HMV 101, which was kind of just a basic one, quite lightweight comparatively.
Right.
And then, yeah, they tweaked things about, and as you say, they set on this formula. And I think they were making them up until the mid-50s.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, you know, music technology had changed by that point. So playing Elvis on a needle is probably not the best idea.
Right.
You can do it, but it's probably not the best thing
to
do.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what did we start off there? Our first record was
Well, we started off with Deep Henderson tune, and it's called Deep Henderson. It's by Coon Sanders and his The Nighthawk. Sorry, I'll say that again. Coon Sanders and his Nighthawks Orchestra, and that's from 1926, and it's an electric recording. So, to be honest, I don't have that many acoustic recordings simply because they're not that easy to get hold of in the UK. If they are, they're usually like military band music.
They're more of a pain in the butt, anyway.
Yeah, probably. But so I think, kind of by accident, most of my records that I brought with me are kind of on the cusp of sort of acoustic electric, but mainly sort of 1926 onwards.
And you've watched all UK records, and I haven't compared yet. Maybe I'll do it later to see if these were things that were issued also in the US.
Well, the tunes would have been issued, obviously. I mean, most of the ones I brought with me are actually British pressings.
Right, but I wonder if they're the same tunes, but that's a British pressing and there's an American pressing, which is the same exact record, pretty much.
I would think so. But the lovely thing about these is that you probably don't see many of the actual original HMV labels here.
No, we don't.
You know, with Nipper the dog on it.
Old Nipper.
Absolutely. But most of the records that you find in the UK, that even Americans of American records, they are mainly HMV, it has to be said. You get a lot of Brunswick as well, but it's a lot of HMV.
They were the big ones.
Indeed.
They were the main guys. Well, let's move on to another record. What have we got next?
Well, talking about main guys, I don't think you could get much more main than Paul Whiteman in his orchestra.
Sure.
And
by the way, I should mention to you, I just saw the restored version of The King of Jazz last week.
Oh, really?
At the Museum of Modern Art.
Not seen that.
Long lost copy, finally restored.
Fantastic.
Look for it. Really, 1926 movie, I believe. It was a 28? Maybe it was a little later.
Yeah.
Fantastic document.
Sure.
So keep your eyes open for any time that shows up.
And the tune is, you may know it already. It's St. Louis Blues.
Oh, a huge one. W.C. Handy's one of his big ones.
Indeed.
Done so many times by so many people. I don't think I've ever heard Paul Whiteman's version, so let's hear it.
Thank you.
Nice version of that tune there. Paul doing his thing with his big band. It was good to see them in the film, the way he conducted and the size of his band, and just it was a really good little time capsule.
Yeah, I've seen film clips, and it is amazing just the sound he got, and just the, as you say, kind of the size of his orchestra, and
yeah,
the size of the man himself. I mean, he was quite an imposing individual, it would
seem. He was a large man.
Yeah.
And he was a huge star here. Do you see quite a few of his records there? Did his stardom
To be
stretch?
Honest, yeah, probably of records from that period, you possibly see more Paul Whiteman than a lot of other kind of jazz records from that period.
That would make sense because, we exported a lot of things, especially music, the whole jazz scene. You know, I have some UK jazz records, but obviously jazz is an American thing that was spreading around the world. And so someone like Paul Whiteman, who was declared himself the king of jazz or the marketing materials or whatever it was. Yeah. So how do you find collecting 78s in the UK, in Scotland is these days?
Well, records are quite easy to get hold of, it has to be said. I think you probably have a similar thing here. We call them charity shops. I think you call them thrift stores,
yeah.
Goodwill or stuff like that.
Yep.
That's where I get nearly
But they're mostly crap.
They are mostly crap.
Yeah,
yeah, you're quite right. In the UK as well, most records you probably see are Bing Crosby's White Christmas.
Right.
Bing Crosby's White Christmas and what's the other one? Oh, yeah, Bing Crosby's White Christmas.
Oh, yes, I love that one.
Yeah. So you cannot escape Bing Crosby. And quite often, you know, if people are getting rid of a collection of 78s, what are they? They're usually Bing Crosby.
Right, right.
I used to hate Bing Crosby, by the way. I used to hate his records until I heard one record, and that was with Gus Arnhem and his orchestra. I don't know if you know it. It's Ho Hum.
I don't know that one.
It's, I think, from about 1931, and that kind of just changed my whole opinion of Bing Crosby. I know. I mean, a lot of his records are very schmaltzy.
Right. He's got some good ones, though.
But he's
sure.
got some good ones. And, of course, he sang with Paul Whiteman and his orchestra.
Oh, he's in the movie.
Yeah.
With the Rhythm Boys.
Yeah, that's right.
His early incarnation. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, I find that a lot of the thrift stores don't even take 78s these days.
No.
So it's really through, I don't even go to many yard sales. Occasionally these record shows, I'll find the 78s. We have a good one here every 6 months that I'll go to and find records. But I'm lucky that people contact me about finding them here.
Well, I find that as well, you know, when I'm doing gigs and stuff like that.
There you go.
Know, so often I have the conversation, oh, yeah, my dad's got records. He doesn't want them. They're in a box in the attic or whatever. And do you want them? Yes, I do.
Yes. My answer is maybe.
Oh, you're a maybe.
Yeah, I'm a maybe because I don't want to take in these things that I don't really want to play or use or I can't use.
Well, I find if they're not Bing Crosby records, they're nearly always Scottish country dance band.
Right.
I don't know if you're familiar with the work of Jimmy Shand.
I'm not.
He was the king of Scottish accordion music.
Right.
And probably every record that's not a Bing Crosby record is likely to be a Jimmy Shand record.
Right. Yeah. We both know of Greg Butler because I've had him on this show when I visited the UK a few years ago.
Sure.
He's one of the guys who's... Have you ever gone to his picnic barbecue record sale?
No, I've only seen pictures on Facebook. It looks incredible. He's a really nice guy, and
he
does some great stuff.
Do you get some stuff from him sometimes?
I don't actually have any, but he's definitely a man to go to, I would say.
He sure is.
Yeah.
I wonder how this Brexit thing is going to affect the price of 78s in the UK.
Oh, I don't know. I hadn't really thought about that. Do you think
you should really think about it.
Do you think this might be a problem?
Not for me.
Do you think my member of parliament should write to my member of parliament?
You should have one of those guys stand up and speak about it tomorrow
on
CNN.
Yeah. Okay. I'll
it's something I'm sure that no one even thought about with me taking this vote.
Yeah. I think you're right. There could be some sort of shellac wars or something like that happening.
It could have a long-term value on a lac beetle.
Michael, you're making me worried now.
Lac beetle migration.
God, I really hadn't thought of that. This could be a real problem.
Sorry. Let's just actually move on to our next record and not think about those things.
Yeah, well, shall I say what the next record is?
Yes, let's talk about it. Yeah.
Well, I just picked this record out when I was going through a bunch of 78s the other day. And it's not a record I'm particularly familiar with, but I just like it because I like Fred Astaire. And it's Fred with his sister, Adele. And it's a song called Oh, gee, oh, gosh. It's got talking at the beginning, so there's, nice. There's talking for quite a bit. And then, you know, Fred does his thing.
I don't think I have any records of the two of them together.
I've got a couple.
Yeah? I don't really know too much about their partnership. I know they were a dancing partnership, but I didn't know they made records, too.
They made a few records, you know, sort of Gershwin Review type stuff of the late 20s, early 30s. Mm-hmm. And then I think it was just the case that Fred decided he wanted to move to California and become a film star.
Right.
And Adele didn't. And the next thing you know is, who's Adele?
Yeah, that's kind of what happened. Yeah.
Hello.
Yep. All right. Well, let's hear it.
Well, I'm surprised at you flirting with that fortune hunter, that gondola pusher.
Well, I guess it's none of your business whom I flirt with.
It is, too. Oh. It's every man's business to protect foolish women.
Oh, I'm foolish, am I? Yeah. Just because I find the count attractive. Mm. I guess you don't realize what a charm he has for women. Oh. Being a mere baby, you wouldn't. Mm. But all these continentals, they're so subtle, so polished.
Yeah, shoes.
Their manners, the things they say to us.
A lot of lying, good for nothing, that's what they are. If I were you, I'd wait until I grew up before I tried to judge men.
Oh, I'm 18.
Mere child.
Is that so? My mother was only 18 when I was born.
Yeah, that's what she says. Of course, in the olden days.
Yes,
in the olden days, it was far different.
Great beard growing down to the ground.
Oh, you're nothing but a child. When I stopped to think that you, that I...
Yes, Teddy.
Oh, God. There is something I must say, but just hate to discuss. Because I'm shy, I guess that's why. It's about me. I mean you. I mean the two of us. And if I had no fear, here's what you would hear. I dream about you, night, time, and day. Mad about you, sad without you, when you're away.
Georgie, come in here. Aren't you with me? And what would I be? My heart just stopped.
Driving, walking, thinking, talking, you're in my heart.
Am I in it every minute?
Near or apart? Oh, golly, I love you.
They taught never what their lady said. Don't forget, you must be bold. Night and I come old. You have oh so many faults. You're not the type. And yet, somehow I like you so. So why I do not know.
I dream about you. Dream about you, night, time, and day. Mad about you, sad without you, when you're away.
No days of me here, aren't you with me here? What would I need? My heart just stopped.
Riding, walking, thinking, talking, you're in my heart.
Am I in it every minute?
Near or apart?
So far distressing, so how dare I guess?
Oh, gee, oh, God, oh, golly, I love you.
An abrupt ending there. Very sweet one, but it's kind of weird that he's saying I love you to his sister.
It is. I mean, there can't be many brother-sister acts, are there?
I know some sister acts.
Some brother
acts? I
can't
think of a lot of brother-sister acts, though.
It is kind of weird, isn't it?
That he's, you know, the context of that song.
Yeah.
A little bit
But
weird.
Also, at the beginning, it was quite brother-sister, though. They were having a go at each other.
Right.
But very charming. And I think that's what I like about... Fred Astaire. A lot of the gigs I do are sort of, rather than it for dancing, they're kind of like for show or exhibitions or something like that. So somebody like Fred Astaire, you know, whether it's Putting on the Ritz or Cheek to Cheek, the sort of 1930s classics.
Right.
Fred just sounds great. I mean, he's not a great singer, but he has a charm about him. I don't think there are many singers out there who had that charm.
Yeah. A lot of... playing these records for people, and I think even this show It's about the atmosphere of it.
Oh, it's almost for what I do, it's almost entirely about the atmosphere. It's about creating an atmosphere, because, you know, you're creating an atmosphere by the way you dress, you know, when you turn up, and what you're playing the records on, the records themselves.
Right.
I've got, you know, like, I'm sure you possibly do as well, you know, have, you know, a particular kind of light. You know, you have your little box of needles, and it's all about show in a way, and the music itself, although it's obviously really, really important, it's kind of part of a package as I see it.
Right. Yeah. Right. And tell me about the reaction you get from people in the UK with these machines when they see them.
People love it, and they're completely incredulous. They don't believe
well, it's true, right?
Yeah, hold on. yeah, but it's not really old, is it? And you say, well, this machine was made in 1928. Oh, no, it's not. It's had stuff done to it. And
where's the USB, though?
And the records, you know, these vinyls.
Yeah.
You have to stop them there, first of all, as everyone probably listening to this program knows. Well, there's no such word as vinyls anyway. It's vinyl. But anyway, it's shellac. And you explain to them.
What?
And they say, shellac? What's that?
What is that?
Yeah. Well, it's what became... what came before vinyl?
Huh? And, wow! Something came before vinyl?
Apparently so. Yes. In the 1940s, these clever chaps have invented something new. But no, it's the reaction to them is great. People love them, and as I say, generally speaking, it starts off with incredulity, and then when they realise, wow, that music has come. You've got a bit of metal.
He's authentic.
What's going on? There's a bit of metal, and it's like sticking out of a thing, and it's like sticking into that record, and it's coming out. How does that work?
Yeah.
And then when you're trying to explain it, it still doesn't make sense.
Say, just stick your head in front of the machine and listen without the sound. Yeah. Oh, wow. That's how it comes out.
Do you know what I always think? I always think if there's a point where all technology fails and, you know, the world seems to be coming to an end.
Right.
And, you know, you can't listen to your iPhone, you can't listen to your normal record player or your whatever, you'll still be able to listen to a wind-up gramophone.
Oh, absolutely.
And that kind of makes it feel even more special that, you know, even without all the modern technology, you will still be able to listen to recorded music with a gramophone.
I think when the whole Y2K scare was going around, I think it was the last week in 1999 when I was doing my show. I said, okay, everyone, when everything crashes on whatever it was, New Year's Eve coming up, next Tuesday I'm going to be doing my show. We're all going to meet in Central Park, and I'm bringing my gramophone, and we're all just going to sit around and do the show.
The last DJ standing.
Yeah.
The world's only DJ.
That's it. The show will go on, whether it's on the radio or we're just sitting around listening to records. Meet me in Central Park. Of course, nothing crashed.
Of course not.
We just went on and I just keep on doing the show.
But the thing I love about doing the working with phonographs and that kind of stuff is the fact that you are playing the music of the time on the technology it was designed for. I think you can download probably all these records we're playing tonight, but it's the experience is completely different. The sound of, you know, when you're putting the machine on, the sound of you putting the needle in the groove, and you've got the lovely crackle and hiss before the record starts, and then the record starts. I mean, it doesn't sound really clear. It doesn't sound nice. It sounds a bit dirty, a bit nasty.
It's evocative,
exactly.
And do you let the machine slow down a little bit sometimes?
Occasionally, I mean, not,
it starts to happen. Right? It's like I kind of let it go.
It does.
Oh, let it just happen. You're like, what's going on?
Yeah, there's certain records, but it's all right because you should never I was told quite early on you should never really wind the record when it's playing.
Oh, I don't know if that's true.
I don't know if it's true either. But that was sort
I don't
of
think so.
That's maybe one of those sort of schoolboy errors that you're always told, no, don't do that.
Nah, that's not true. Let me debunk that right now for you.
I still do it.
Yeah.
Just because I was told not to doesn't mean I don't still do it.
Because you were told not to do it, you do it.
That might be also true.
That's always good.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on to another record. Let me just mention that my guest tonight is Graham. I don't even know your last name. Do you want to say it?
No, I think it should remain a secret.
Good. Yeah. Also known as Lord Holyrood,
who is a
UK shellac DJ. Visiting New York, and we've been in contact through the years, so I thought, oh, perfect opportunity to have him come on, play records, and give his perspective on this pursuit of, and I'm seeing more and more people around the world doing this, playing 78s on these old machines. And also, I guess that means there's a wider appreciation of it.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think it goes along with it. Even my show, I remember when I was first doing it, it was just on the air. It's very slow. I get some feedback, but more and more people listen now than ever because they're more and more. I think there's some correlation with the further we get away from the artifact, the more people are interested in it.
But, and there's this whole, I mean, certainly in the UK, and I'm sure it's the same here, there's this whole vintage thing going on.
Oh, yeah.
That everyone's kind of, you know, even, you know, the mainstream is very keen on, you know, vintage clothes and vintage things, and I think, you know, in a way the phonographs kind of fall into that, so the people are maybe slightly more predisposed to have an interest in something like this, and then take a little bit more interest in them.
I've been my show led me to getting involved in that scene here in New York about 8 years or so ago, and going to this thing, the Jazz Age Lawn Party in on Governor's Island, and Bill Cunningham, who passed away this week, started coming out and documenting the event and putting it in the New York Times, certainly was someone who contributed to this local trend becoming a worldwide phenomenon and now an established genre. So I've watched it progress from one thing to the other. And, yeah, shout out to Bill Cunningham. He really documented this whole vintage scene for the world to see. So, yeah. Wonderful. I heard they're going to name his corner 57th and 5th, where he always used to stand, Bill Cunningham Corner, for a while. Because he would just stand there and take pictures of people. Look him up. You'll see all about him.
Cool.
He's a New York original. But let's move on to our next record, which is going to be one of my favorite types of records.
Well, I kind of brought this along as a tribute to you because I
appreciate it.
I know you like laughing records.
I sure do.
I can't really find out anything about Fred Arthurs.
It might be a pseudonym.
It might be a Fred Arthur. I mean, it could be a pseudonym. Who's the guy who had sang The Laughing Policeman?
Arthur Pembroke.
Might be him.
Yeah, because he did, and he did The Laughing Policeman. He did as many laughing records as Cal Stewart, who is the counterpart, the laughing counterpart.
Oh, right,
here.
Okay.
So it could be him. Because, and, you know, a lot of artists would do pseudonyms to avoid contractual conflicts.
Different labels.
So maybe it is this guy. I don't know. Would you be able to identify his laugh as Arthur Pembroke? Or
no.
If it's the other guy? Neither would I. It doesn't matter because I think same thing happened in the UK as it did here. There was a flood of people putting out laughing records. And I'm happy about it because I have at least 25 of them.
Wow.
It's my goal one day to play them all at the same time. But I need 25 gramophones in a room. I have to arrange that somehow. But, okay, so this is just called Laughing Mad.
Indeed.
Fred Arthur's, a Columbia record. Do we know what year this one is?
Again, I think we're around 1926 for that.
Okay.
But as I say, I can't really find out any information. So if anybody knows about him, let us know.
All right, here we go.
Jolly fellow, I'm laughing all the day. It's such a funny feeling, but I'm all but bright and gay. Now said I started laughing the moment I was born. Brother Fred is just the opposite and all but most forlorn. We look so sad and get quite mad when I start laughing at some fun I've had. Don't tell me funny stories, or I shall crack my sides and laugh until I hurt myself, no matter what betides. I really can't stop laughing. They say I'm laughing mad. Something always tickles me. Now Fred got wed to a pretty little girl and thought she had lots of money. But he soon found she couldn't agree, so married life wasn't all honey. she really hadn't got a fence, was a widow with children three. When he told me how she'd done him down, I laughed with hearty glee. Then he looked so sad and got quite mad, when I burst all my buttons with a laugh I had. Oh! It was a funny story, when he told me how she'd lied. I laughed until I hurt myself, until I fairly cried. I couldn't stop my laughter, I nearly drove him mad. Poor old Fred. The best laugh that I ever had, when I got with myself, to the missus plump and jolly, and blessed with lots of wealth. We really are so happy, and laugh throughout the day. With the talk of all the neighbourhood, we're always bright and gay. We never feel sad and don't get mad, but always plenty of good fun to be had. We can tell you funny stories that will make you crack your sides, and laugh until you hurt yourselves and split your clothes beside. We really can't stop laughing. I know I'm laughing mad.
Very nice.
Very English as well, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
I said 1926, but I think that's definitely earlier than 1926.
Yeah.
It sounds it.
It sounded more acoustic. Mm. So, in that realm of the whole laughing song, a verse, laugh, out. Love those. I never get tired of them.
What was the first one you got? Do you remember?
Well, it had to be the OK Laughing Record. Which was the, do you know that one?
I am not particularly familiar with it, no.
It was a German record on the OK label.
Okay.
And that was released here in the United States around 1919. And actually, my experience was there was a cartoon when I was young called Shh, about a guy trying to get some sleep, and he keeps hearing these people laughing in the next room, and it's driving him insane. Turns out it's the OK Laughing Record that they were using as the soundtrack. I realized years later, like, what the hell was that? And found the record, and the OK Laughing Record. And that was the thing that really, well, I was going to say started the trend in the teens and 20s, but laughing records were around forever from the very beginning with George W. Johnson in 1900. In the 1800s, there were laughing records. It seemed people loved to hear laughing on records.
Certainly, it was the laughing policeman, I think, that anyone in the UK would talk about, Arthur Penrose.
Right, right. Yeah. Oh, yes. Very good. Okay. Well, let's continue now with a record by a band who our American audiences will be very familiar with, the original Dixieland Jazz Band.
Indeed. But I'm slightly confused. I've brought two copies of the records. One is on our British HMV label, right. And one is on Brunswick. They're obviously both reissues of sorts, but just the information contained on both the sleeves not only contradicts itself, but contradicts stuff you read on the internet. And generally, when I was looking through the records for this program, I was genuinely confused by it, because I can't quite work out when Tiger Rag was recorded and released on these records, because the one I'm holding says the original Dixieland Jazz Band electrical recreation of the original, and it says American recording in December 1920. And I think the one that you've got in your hand is supposedly the original, and I think it says 1916 or something like that.
Yeah, but the label Brunswick says 21 years of swing music, album one.
Yeah,
so it's some kind of collection.
Indeed.
Which it still could be the original reissued, because, you know, even in the 40s, you were having reissues of 1920s Louis Armstrong.
Sure.
Or other big
but
jazz.
If it's 1916, 21 years on from that.
No, it wouldn't have been 16, because their first records came out in 1917.
Okay.
And Tiger Rag, I think, came out around 1918.
But as I say, this one that I've got says it's a recreation of a record that was made in 1920. So did they...
So maybe 1920 is when that Tiger Rag came out, and it's a recreation of that version.
I don't know. It's confusing.
I don't know either.
Do you know when the original Tiger Rag came out then?
I think it's around 1919 or 1920. Right.
Okay.
Pretty sure, off the top of my head.
But it is a bit confusing. I don't know. I think maybe when it came over to the UK as well. I don't know. Maybe they tinkered with it.
Probably. I mean, jazz, I think, darted out of the U.S. pretty quickly to the U.K.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how quick, but these were the guys who did the first jazz music on record officially,
mm-hmm.
and launched the whole jazz sensation around the world. So it makes sense that these would be U.K. releases and that they would be reissued far into the future, as
sure.
they still are looked at by historians as the jazz guys.
Indeed.
Well, we're going to try the Brunswick version, and I'm very familiar with this song. So we'll be able to tell if it's the original or another recreation.
Good.
So let's hear it. Here's your Laughing Record.
Thank you very much.
I think I know what they did. There was this movement in the 40s
mm-hmm.
where they were taking these old acoustic recordings and trying to make them sound better. They would take the originals and they'd do all this EQing on them, and they'd produce an electric copy from the acoustic copy. And it was really not great results. I mean, that was like sort of overdriven a little bit.
Yeah, it's kind of like those...
It lost all its depth.
Remember in the 70s, there was all that electronically processed for stereo.
Yeah. that's what this kind of thing
yeah.
they did. I've seen it done with Caruso. I've never heard it done with them.
Oh, right. So that's new to you.
So, yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Interesting to see that that's what they did.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is.
Okay.
Now we're going to play another one on the HMV label, and let's see if they did the same kind of thing.
They kind of claim to do that on there. That's the one that says it's electronically processed in some way.
Right. Electronically processed.
Whatever that means.
I don't like that term. Electronically processed.
Processed by electronic.
Yeah, what are they talking about?
I don't know.
Well, I think we know. Let's see, because I don't think they did a good job with it. They thought, oh, these old records are really good, but they sound really bad. We've got to improve them.
Improve in inverted commas. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's this one you're about to play is on HMV, and it's a really nice pressing. I mean, it's nice and there's no scratches on it, so it should be. It's going to be as clear as you can get it.
What is it we're going to hear?
It's Jasmine's Blues, I think, isn't it? Nice. That was a much nicer one, I think. It was very clean.
Also, I'm noticing that the different microphones are having different reactions to these records. Like, that one was a little more crunchy, but this microphone's working a little better for that record. So it's a miking thing, too, with these records.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's... they have to, I experimented a lot with miking these machines to get the right kind of sound.
Me too. I mean, that was the thing. I tried taping microphones to various parts of the gramophones, putting them on the music stands and all that kind of stuff. But with the Picnic gramophones, I thought, well, look, why am I wasting all my time with this? Let's just stick it in the sound box and see what happens. And
right.
So, and that's the best thing for it. You just plug it in and you put it in the sound box and leave it. You don't have to put it on a piece of rubber or anything like that. Just sit it there and it works fine.
Yeah.
You might have to tweak it if you're putting it through a PA, but it sounds great.
Right. And the idea is when I play them here too is not to play them too loud. These things aren't meant to be played too loud. They never were too loud records. I mean, you had no volume control on these machines.
Indeed.
You had your needles that could be a louder tone or a soft tone. You could bring it down by putting a sock in it.
That's
but
right.
Generally, they were never very loud machines.
And that's the thing. I mean, you don't. It's not like you're doing a disco, for example. So, like when I'm at a gig, I'm not necessarily trying to fill a whole room. It's to kind of give a flavor.
Right. And if people want to contact you, how do they find out about you?
Well, the best way to find me actually is on Facebook.
Right, of course.
I have a Lord Holyrood gramophone DJ like page. So just type in Lord Holyrood. I am the only Lord Holyrood. It's HOLYRUDE.
Lord Holyrood.
And obviously you must say it out loud when you're typing it that way.
You must. That's how I always say it.
That's exactly what I sound like as well, isn't it? Anyway, yeah, find me on Facebook. Like me on Facebook, as they say. You were saying I should get into Instagram.
Yeah, so you have to, because what you do is so visual that you really have to let people see it. I mean, Facebook is good for that too, but it's just a whole other world, the Instagram thing. You know, I put up our little photo before, so I was like, let me hashtag you. You're like, you can't. I was like, what?
I will get hashtagged when I get home. Don't worry.
Right, right.
It's going to happen.
You're going to get hashtagged somewhere by somebody.
And what did you say as well? You said it's Instagram. That's
it's
my name.
Instagram. That's
Instagram,
right.
Instagram, yeah.
For Graham.
It has to be me.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, as I was saying before, I think that this is an established genre now. And I think like you can be doing, DJing this like this for the rest of your life. Because it's really my goal to be the world's oldest DJ. And since I'm older than you, I'll get there before you.
All right.
So I think I'm going to be really popular when I'm 95 years old.
That's an interesting concept,
yeah, really,
isn't it?
Really
yeah.
Old and having some, like, young flapper girls cranking the machines and stuff.
I'll get somebody to do it for you.
Oh, yeah,
somebody
yeah. Sort of direct them around.
When you're no longer able to crank your own handle, you get somebody else to do it for you.
That's right.
Sounds like an idea.
You get, like, some flapper.
Well, of course.
Who just left home.
Who else?
Yeah.
Yes.
Who's looking for direction in her life.
Absolutely.
That's the time you get. That's the way you get them.
It is, obviously. You've worked it out.
Hook them in.
You've worked it out,
yeah.
Haven't you? Yeah.
So,
business plan.
Long-term planning. Long-term planning for my 78 plane.
You'll be rocking the old folks' homes. I can see that.
No.
No?
It's going to be, what are they going to call the millenniums in 50 years, 40 years?
Oh, I don't know. Probably all sorts of...
horrible things.
Offensive words. Yes.
Who, when it won't even be a matter of their faces buried in the phones the whole time, because the things will just have their glasses on.
I know. They'll be some sort of computer interface on the inside of their eyelids, I would think. Yeah. That's probably, yeah. That's
so not even having to have really human interaction.
And I'm sure they will have got rid of all music by that point.
But they're going to be fascinated by these machines.
They will though. Be. I mean, so the other people have been getting rid of music for years. You know, like I think like on American Idol and things like that. We've been eradicating popular music. So,
you know what's going to be cool in the future?
What's that?
CD DJs.
CD DJs?
DJing with CDs.
Wow, that might...
It's going to be retro.
Do you think that's going to catch on?
After it's completely dead, it'll catch on again.
Wow.
Because we all know it all comes around.
I can't wait.
At a certain point.
I can't
wait. That's the way
wait.
It works.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. We can probably fit in one or two more songs.
Okay.
We'll see. What do we got next here?
Well, just because I like Paul Whiteman and I haven't brought that many records with me, I thought we'd flip him over, so to speak, and on the other side of St. Louis Blues... another song, which I always find this fascinating, that probably every record that you probably have in your collection as well as mine says Foxtrot. Everything's a Foxtrot,
yes.
Which I love. I mean, when you buy it, you don't buy a Rihanna record or anything. Well, you shouldn't probably do that anyway, but if you buy like a record post-1960 or whatever, it never tells you what kind of dance you should do to it. But these records were laying it down. You shall dance to the Foxtrot.
Yes, because I don't want to frug. to the foxtrot.
Definitely not.
You want to get it right.
Or mosh.
Or grizzly bear.
Or mosh. Or do the watusi. Or
yeah, yeah.
Do the monkey.
I need to be told.
You do. It says on the label.
Yep.
And it also says the name of the song, the name of the tune, which on this occasion is Trudy.
Let's hear it.
Okay.
Some Paul Whiteman there. An hour goes quick here on the Antique Phonograph Music Program. We really wanted to get on Harry Lauder because he's the patron phonograph saint of Scotland, isn't he?
If you say so, yeah.
Does he still have a reputation in Scotland?
He has a reputation of kind of portraying a sort of Scotsman that perhaps most Scotsmen probably wouldn't either wish to recognize or. Yeah,
he's a caricature.
He's a caricature. Yeah, it's all a bit. It's called I think the technical term is tartan tree and kale yard, which is basically, you know, some shortbread tin Scotland.
Right, right, right.
But he was highly successful.
Well, he put Scotland on the map. He put him on the map.
He did.
No, he put Scotland on the world map.
Huge star in the USA.
He did. So you can't fault him with that. And we're going to kind of go out on this song. We usually try to end on a song, but our timing's off tonight. But I want to thank you, Graham, for coming down tonight.
Thank you for inviting me.
And sharing your records and your point of view on this shellac DJ thing that's going on around the world. Very much appreciate you coming down.
Thanks.
A pleasure having you. And next time, we'll have time for a whole Harry Lauder record. So I'm going to just throw this on. And I'll be back next week, folks, with more stuff. We're going out on, what's this one called?
Well, appropriately, The End of the Road.
End of the Road. Here we go.
Every road through life is a long, long road filled with joys and sorrows.
This is WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org.
swamp.